Wait, hold on, wrong intro.
We are the latest generation of hackers. We grew up playing video games. We were the ones who looked for all the hidden items and figured out cheat codes. We saw what computers could do and thought, I think we can do more. We heard of hackers from the mass media and thought, I want to know exactly how to do what they do. Even as these hackers were made out to be criminals, we still wanted to learn. We eventually found out that hacking is not evil, which settled better with our morals. We're here to share and educate. We are BaseNet Radio.
So that, like...
This is Silent Slade, your host, and with me today for episode 1A of BaseNet Radio is Morbid.
You.
Slicko.
Who?
Our resident engineer, and me, Silent Slade. So, hey, what are we going to do today? We have more than enough sections to fill a show, definitely this week, but most of them have no content. Again, just like this week. We're always interested in new sections, so please fill us in and send us an email at basenet@basenetradio.net with any ideas. Don't forget, any reproduction or retransmission of this show and material is totally motherfucking encouraged. So please fucking share.
Are we allowed to curse on this show? That's a question.
I don't fucking care.
Oh,
I guess so.
Fuck that.
Yeah, I'm doing the stank thing this week. It's sailor talk and trucker trash. Anyway, that's why this MP3 is available for download at our website, basenetradio.net, and I guess it's time for our first section. And as you can see, I guess it's time for the mail section of the week, mail and comments. So let's start with the email, and we have quite a bit of backlog since we kind of took a vacation last week.
We took a vacation?
Kind of, sort of. We weren't on the air.
True.
We were kind of
hungover.
Unconscious, dead to the world.
Karaoke.
Karaoke.
That was Tuesday. We were dead to the world on Monday.
True. We were useless all weekend long. We do have farts of a show.
But, news.
But
we're going to go over that later on after we record tonight, and we're going to have a pretty interesting show. Half of it's got to be like on the road.
Yeah, it's quite a bit of stuff. Anyway,
I mean, we thought we were gonna try to get a show done there. Mm-hmm. We were too gone. We had Murdoch try to host the show. He had some good stuff though. We're gonna keep him hosting for the on the road section.
On the road section.
Yes.
Okay. Well, let's see. Let me.
Somebody as gone as him. Damn, he did a good job.
All right. We have a lot of emails. A lot of them I really can't read simply because they either say things that we're gonna do, or they're just too short and refer to something that we can't play. All right, well, let's see. This first one is from Polymera. Hola, BaseNet crew. Hola, that's nice. Now that you guys are talking about putting your show on RSS or podcasting, how about putting BaseNet on iTunes?
Ooh.
Infonomicon is, and some others, which he doesn't mention, it would be really nice if you guys would get more traffic. Just a thought.
That's not a bad idea.
No, it's not. And something that I think I'm going to probably do by tomorrow.
Does it cost anything?
I don't think it costs shit.
No, I don't believe so.
Oh, that's cool.
But we need to set up an RSS feed first. And that means we'll have an official podcast.
Right.
And we'll have an official, like, link on iTunes. Until they realize what we're a hacking show and they take us off. But that doesn't matter.
Nobody cares.
I don't know. Rant Radio doesn't seem to show up on iTunes much more anymore.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's interesting.
That's not fair, is it? And neither does it on Winamp, AOL's Winamp.
Interesting.
I looked for it when I had a chance. They have Rant Radio Industrial and the electronic stuff, but they do not
have Talk.
Have Talk.
Interesting.
Which sucks, because we're on Talk, damn it.
Well, I guess we could always just try.
Yeah, well, I mean, I don't know. It's Sim stuff, not ours, so I can't really tell them what to do.
Yeah, anyway, but we could try to get our show on at least.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Okay, next email is a bit longer. It has to do with the Tiger 10.4 Intel fiasco, which I guess we also have news on as well.
We do.
Want to integrate both into this one?
Nah, we'll do the
we'll
news
do the
separate.
News later. All right. This is where I need to tell you that there's definitely no registration key needed for OS X. Although usually there's some sort of registration bullshit where they want you to send all your details and docs to Apple. And just want you to, you can always quit that with using, you know, the Apple or Command Q buttons, depending on how old your keyboard is.
Did we do this last episode? Or no,
we did this on the road.
Right.
And I want to just redo it on the air.
So because, I guess that will be cut out. All right.
Yeah.
Good idea.
Might as well. As far as Intel Macs are concerned, they will be released with 10.5 Leopard. Yeah. Great name. Although every OS X release has a fully functional x86 port that Apple has kept a close secret on. So there are x86 versions of like Aqua, Panther?
All that fun stuff.
All that
yeah.
old crap. Anyway. Leopard will not be installable on any cheap-ass Dell box, though. You have to use Apple hardware.
Interesting.
So you can't... You can use it on x86, but it will want to have some Apple hardware in there, which
so I guess those people who are saying that they've got it running on Dells and stuff were just pure all
I'm pretty sure you could probably do it.
It needs to be, like, very closely compatible hardware,
though. It has to be somewhat closely compatible. Plus, don't forget, this is, you know, I don't really know, no offense, how accurate all this information is and how flexible OS X10.5 is. Anyway, that was End User breaking in there. His music. His music.
Yeah, I was going to say, that doesn't sound like End User.
Yeah, but he usually doesn't have voice. Right, anyway, Slash Me Vomits, that's nice. Anyway, the Intel is faster than the dual 2 gigahertz for OpenGL, but a hell of a lot slower for Quartz, etc. So it's good news for gamers, but not that great for everyone else. Anyway, enjoyed the shows. Stefanovich. P.S. You guys check out X11 and Fink on OS X yet?
Oh, yes.
Oh?
X11 and Fink on OS X? Yeah, I use Fluxbox on my Mac.
Nice. Flux is really nice. I'm using Flux right now.
Oh, yeah?
It has to be one of the fastest window managers next to Black.
Do you know what? I'm just waiting. I'm using other window managers right now. I was even recently looking at some others. I'm looking for something with... I don't know. It's just... I miss border snapping when I use Flux. Border snapping is so nice. I like having everything tiled and whatnot. I use Ion sometimes, too, because that's a tiling window manager.
Yeah, you really like that one.
Yeah, that one was good. But then it kind of... You can't do some things. Some programs are bitchy with it, so... Right now I'm using XFCE4, and that's doing well. I use that in ISWM.
That one reminds me so much of Windows.
Which one? XFCE?
XFCE. I don't know. It's actually pretty good if you set it up properly for someone who's switching from Windows to Linux for the first time.
Right.
Because it kind of lies to them at first. They think there's a quick launch menu, and they think that there's, like, a taskbar.
Well, there is. It's called your right-click.
I know. You know what I mean. For people who aren't used to what right-click does. I know a lot of people who've never right-clicked anything in their life.
That's like, true.
If you don't double-click, I don't know what to do.
But what I find handy about XFCE is the little buttons on the, like, not little buttons. The application, the open applications, why can't I remember what it is? Icon bar, I guess is what it's called in Enlightenment. You could have it so it only displays the icon and not the title. So it's almost like it's a quick launch, but smaller, like even if you set it up right. And you could click that, it's very nice.
Yeah, you can do the same thing in E16. I don't know about 17.
I have 17 on this.
Is 17 running well?
I have 17 on this laptop. It runs fine.
A bit slow.
I don't think it's going to be my window manager of choice, even when it is finally released.
It's going to be the show-off window manager of choice when you try to test your hardware.
Oh, hell yeah. It's going to be like, yo, Steve Jobs don't got shit on Enlightenment.
All right. Well, let me just finish up with these emails, because there's only one more that can read on air, because the other ones were just suggesting stuff that we probably will use, so I can't read.
Okay.
So, anyway, this one is from... Oh, there's no handle, so it's going to be TK.
You're not reading Delete's email?
Not yet.
Oh, we're going to save that for the clip that Murdoch made.
Yes.
Okay.
Okay. Hey, guys, before I get to the point, I just want to say that I love the show and look forward to it every week. Anyway, I found this site, and I thought you might find it funny. And it's a link to Foamy.
What's that?
Foamy the squirrel?
Foamy? I love Foamy. Foamy's ran is great.
I remember one of the first times we even... recorded BaseNet like months ago. What was it, a year ago actually?
It was December.
Well, over. Well, our first show public was December, but you mean like before that?
Right, sometime in that pre-show era.
So it was August and after,
right,
and beyond.
Summer, probably like November. We watched this, and it's the foamy episode with the tech support where he calls in.
Right, right. I remember that now.
Yes, wow. And I know exactly how he feels because that's what I do at my job all day. But anyway,
not anymore.
Well, I still have to deal with people outsourced no matter where you go. It sucks. It's like, yeah, can you please just plug that in? I don't understand what you're saying. Kill me. Anyway, I'm done.
I don't
done.
Understand what kill me means.
Okay, I think I'm done with email. Unless you guys have anything else that you want to bring up.
No, I don't believe so.
All right, so I guess we move on to the next section.
All right, I guess we will.
And I guess that's time for the news.
Sí.
Sí, señor. Okay. Let's see. Let's start with Morbid, who's been adeptly quiet over there.
Okay. Okay. We got the Sasser Worm guy. The guy who made... is that how you pronounce it? Sasser?
That sassy worm?
Sasser.
Sasser, yeah.
Sasser worm. Well, he was sentenced in a German court to... given a suspended sentence of 21 months. I guess this is some minor. He's a minor, so if he commits a crime during probation period, he's going to be... He'll be jailed at juvenile detention center to serve this whole 21-month sentence. So I guess pretty much if he has one day left and he does something, he's going to have to spend the whole 21 months in juvie.
Ouch.
In addition, he must get 30 hours of community service in a home for the elderly or a hospital. That sucks. All for making a little worm that attacked Microsoft. Okay, well now, Microsoft, whose software was targeted by the worm, said it will pay a reward of $250,000 to be shared by two people who helped identify Jaskin, I guess, as the worm's author.
Rat money.
The money will come from the $5 million antivirus reward program set up by Microsoft in 2003.
What?
Okay.
Antivirus support program?
So all we need to do is find something we don't like, convince them to write a virus that's against Microsoft, and then turn them in for $250,000.
I like the way you think. Let me stop.
Who don't
this
we
isn't
like?
Right.
Who don't we like?
I mean, like, you can plant it on someone's computer and claim that they wrote it.
Well, it says, I guess you have to have proof, I guess. I don't know.
Exactly. You can plant it on their computer. Because you know how, like, in colleges and other places, security is, like, completely lax.
Yeah.
You can literally walk into, like, half your campus's network.
Yep.
Well, this guy confessed after he was arrested, so...
Yeah, anyone will confess when they're vice gripping your balls. But anyway.
Well, it is them crafty Germans. They'll come and get you. Okay. So that's that.
Oh, man.
Next story, I guess. I got this one.
Yeah, you got this one because I'm kind of low on stories.
Okay, speaking of the devil, literally, Microsoft shrinks updates. Microsoft
shrinks.
I don't know what that means. I haven't read this yet. Yeah, I have read this actually. Microsoft Wednesday has begun adding code to Windows XP users' PCs that it said will reduce the time it takes future updates to download, a potential boon to those connecting to the internet via dial-up connections.
I'm sorry, what?
Yes,
people still use that shit?
Yes, people still use it.
I'm just kidding.
Nameless still
yes, nameless,
uses it.
Nameless.
She's on your mind a lot, isn't she?
Hey, yeah.
I don't know, the words of Mr. T come to mind. Would I pity the fool?
Just say how much love you're in with Nameless and make all the 16-year-olds that listen to the show cringe. Be like, damn that Morbid, I wish you were mine.
She's my girlfriend.
Okay, enough of that weirdness. Next.
Yeah, okay. So, what did that come from? Oh, yeah. Yeah, dial-up sucks.
I felt a strange sensation in the force. As if a million 16-year-olds just screamed out it all at once.
No! We have a million 16-year-olds who listen?
I doubt
we
it.
We have like 10 16-year-olds that listen.
Oh. The program called Package Installer has previously been part of every update downloaded and installed through the Windows Update site and the Automatic Update service. By putting the files on each PC, Microsoft said subsequent updates can have a significantly smaller download size. Although the package installer download is currently classified only as critical by Microsoft and thus optional, will shortly be made mandatory. As soon as that happens, updates retrieved from Windows Update or through automatic updates will require that the files be on the local machine. Package installer can be downloaded manually from the Microsoft website or by using the Windows Update site, or by going to www.kernel.org and completely revamping your OS to something different. But that's besides the point. So yeah, it seems like they're trying to make smaller updates.
Which is good, I guess, because, well, no, still not good, because it will still take much longer to download your first initial update, and you'll still get pwned by that time, unless you're behind a router or something.
Yeah, it takes how long? 3 minutes average?
Well,
depends what you got.
On a computer that I set up, it was pwned in less than 4.
Pwned?
Pwned, literally. It was just, like, unusable at that point.
Damn it, I missed.
You fucked. Anyway.
I was throwing something at a garbage can.
Yeah, battery, so it was pwned less than 4, and it takes, like, what, average of 40-something minutes to completely patch a system once it's first installed? Because you gotta do an update, reboot,
form another update, updates.
Reboot. Service Pack 2. Reboot. And that's just on Windows XP, and other Windows versions have their own times, but they're still pretty laggy.
It takes, like 2 hours to get a default install of 2000 up to date.
For you.
Oh.
I have everything saved on disk for my old 2000 stuff.
You have it slipstreamed?
I have everything up to Service Pack 4 right on the CD before I even get online.
That's not bad.
After that, I'm pretty secure.
Yeah, then you don't even have to touch the internet.
Hmm?
Then you don't even have to touch the internet for a while.
I don't have to touch the internet until after Service Pack 4 on 2000. But that's just me, because I was just so sick of that back in the day. I don't care anymore, because I haven't touched Windows except for work-related in a long while.
Who likes phones? Shall we talk about phones?
What kind of phones? Cell phones, land phones, VoIP phones.
What's the most evil thing you could think of when you think of phones?
Prison phone.
Well, I have one of those, so I must be pretty evil. But I mean, okay, mobile phones. The
Sprint?
Nextel?
Close. You're both very close.
T-Horator? I mean, mobile?
Yeah, T-Mobile endorsed upgrade challenge, reports of possible sale.
Of T-Mobile?
That's the headline, so let's find
out.
Does
anyone really want to buy it?
Well, they have the cheapest plan, so I guess people go to it for that.
That's why people go to it for that. They have the cheapest plans because they know none of it works.
Yeah, but people still go to it because of the fact that it's just the cheapest plan.
Anyway, the article.
They should just rename it Budget Phone.
T-Mobile is facing the daunting task of moving to 3G technology, a process that some observers say could cost as much as $10 billion. Meanwhile, the company is battling reports Tuesday that it could go on the auction block. However, one German press report cited unnamed telecom officials, probably Deutsche Telekom officials, as calling talk of a sale as purely fictitious. At the same time, the company is currently focused on the difficulties faced by cell phone service providers who must upgrade from the older GSM European standard.
Yeah.
The operators using the more efficient CDMA technologies have since when was CDMA more efficient than GSM? Anyway.
It is somewhat. Yeah. For data transfer, I believe.
Oh, okay.
But other than that, anyway, go on.
Anyway, it says they have a significant competitive advantage over those operators using the older GSM technology, said Joe Nordgaard. As managing director of wireless telephony, Spectral Advantage in an email. CDMA has clear advantages over GSM. You start to understand the dimensions of the problem confronting T-Mobile. Nordgaard, a CDMA advocate, said Singular Wireless has a similar problem as it too is faced with moving to 3G from older GSM base. He noted that Verizon Wireless, which uses advanced 1X EVDO, has already rolled out its 3G service. The remaining large mobile phone service provider, Sprint, is also moving to the advanced EVDO CDMA architecture, but it has several months ahead of it to sort out the multiplicity of spectrum owned by Nextel the firm is acquiring.
Yeah, that's going to be a mess, especially since they use a whole bunch of different technologies on their phones as it is.
Yeah.
They use iDEN. Sprint's using CDMA, right?
Right.
And then they're moving to G3, So they have a bit of work to do.
Anyway, what's interesting is you see, you stay on the same website and they have another thing later. Mm-hmm. Completely unrelated article. Sprint T-Mobile subscribers can share pictures and video.
What?
Sprint Corp, wink, wink.
Yeah, Sprint Corp and T-Mobile USA Incorporated on Thursday said they have agreed to let each other's subscribers exchange pictures and video. The arrangement has the two companies agreeing to multimedia messaging services interoperability, which enables their subscribers to send and receive photos and videos.
I can't say that's a bad thing.
No. VeriSign is handling interoperability for Sprint based in Overland Park, Kansas.
I can say that's a bad thing.
Though VeriSign hosted and managed service called LightSurf GX-MMS. XMMS?
XMS, you mean? There must be a typo.
GX-MMS.
Oh, MMS messaging. Okay, yeah. Okay.
Right.
Phew, I thought you said XMMS for a second.
No, there's a G in the front of it.
No, that makes sense.
But that's why, I mean, I did say XMMS because it's like XMMS. But anyway, both companies said the agreement expands the number of people their subscribers will be able to reach. The deal, however, could also help the bottom line, since carriers often charge for downloads based on the size of the file. At the end of last year, T-Mobile USA, based in Bellevue, Washington, has 17.3 million subscribers. Sprint had 24.8 million wireless customers.
Damn.
So, Sprint has double... Not double, but more than T-Mobile customers, so they must have more money. They must be able to purchase
T-Mobile.
I mean, the talk of T-Mobile selling itself, and then Sprint and T-Mobile, like, getting in bed with each other, that's kind of interesting.
Still, but I always thought Verizon would be the one that buys out T-Mobile. For some reason.
Know.
Simply because it seemed that they were pairing up the big companies. AT&T and Singular.
Yeah.
Nextel with Sprint, which I didn't see at all.
But maybe it's unlike that. But maybe everybody was speculating Verizon's going to be the next Ma Bell. Maybe it's Sprint.
I would hate that to happen.
Sprint may become the Ma Bell of wireless.
Although Verizon's pimping so much money into their fiber network that over time, that's probably going to be better.
Landline service is going to be different. I'm talking about just Wi-Fi. Wireless.
Sorry. Yeah, I know what you mean. Like CDMA, all those technologies. But WiMAX is going to change that when that comes out.
That's going to be interesting.
Because that's going to offer actual data over the air on a cell phone kind of status. The problem is, no one's really making any big moves towards that yet, except for like Intel and
the WiMAX. I think AT&T was working with that, aren't they? At one point.
AT&T's also falling apart at the seams.
True.
Weren't they pimping themselves all over the place? The cell phone version that was once part of AT&T and then split off, so it's now part of Singular. The main is now part of SBC. Who did they sell themselves to?
I have no clue.
It doesn't matter. MCI and all these other companies are just—it's just a mess.
Oh well.
Well, in any case, what else we got?
Oh, okay. I got more Microsoft stuff.
Yeah.
You know, the Longhorn's beta is coming out in a few weeks, and Office 12's beta isn't supposed to be here till the fall. But they kind of are decided to give a little of their new features out. Some Longhorn features.
What did they steal from OS X this time?
Okay. Well, one of the new features known as Meeting Space that the officials are touting as one of the major new Longhorn components. Meeting Space unites presence and peer-to-peer networking to allow users to create a temporary shared environment where they can collaborate and on files and other shared data. Feature will allow users to conduct impromptu meetings without having to use a web conferencing product like Office Live Meeting.
Sorry, go on.
Meeting Space will allow users to discover one other and communicate wirelessly in a casual environment, like a cafe or in a business setting where all parties are not able to connect to a single
corporate
network.
It's like Windows Messenger meets NetMeeting, but for... No, I don't know. Go on. I'm still trying to mentally sort through that.
I'm trying to find... They claim there's going to be some Office 12 stuff in here, but I don't really know what the hell you can add to Office.
Something that Microsoft's Outlook needs really badly.
Security?
No. Something that Gmail does very well. conversation management. Linking emails to conversations. Thunderbird can use that as well, honestly. I know there's some plugins that you can kind of use to kind of create that, but it should be native. That would be a lot better for both Outlook Express, and Thunderbird, and any other mail clients out there. Because conversations just rock. It just makes life a lot easier. But I'm done. Go on.
I don't know. They lied to me. They don't actually have anything about the Office 12 in here. It just said the beta's coming out at some point.
Liar.
I'll be sure to BitTorrent it up as soon as possible.
Oh, something. Linux currently has only 0.013% of the worldwide market share. Undeployed desktop systems. I have no idea how that came into this article at all.
How the hell did that come from? Did Microsoft sneak in there and pop that in?
Let's see. Sievert also uses Keynote to blast Linux desktop as a potential competitor to Windows. To date, when focusing on the competition, Microsoft execs have spent time and energy refuting the appeal of Linux as a server platform. Sievert attacked Linux as a desktop contender as part of his remarks, claiming that Linux has not grown in the desktop space.
Okay, that's...
He also cited Gartner Group research that he showed 80% of Linux systems sold were reverted back to Windows. Many times they're reverted to unlicensed Windows, blah, blah, told partners. But that's my problem, not yours.
Reverted to non-licensed Windows.
To unlicensed Windows.
That doesn't make me feel any better. Why were they reverted, though? I mean, besides gaming, I don't see any reason to go back.
True.
And in offices, you really don't want them to be playing games.
Well, you know what?
Right, exactly.
When I first tried switching to Linux, I only had one machine.
Oh, that sucks.
When I got another machine, I tried it again, and I had one Linux machine. One
Windows
crap machine. Mm-hmm. Yes. And eventually I just got so used to using Linux and just like, why do I even have Windows on here anymore? Damn it.
God forbid, the worst comes to worst, you can dual boot your one system. I did that for a long time.
Yeah.
I dual booted Red Hat and Microsoft Windows like 2003 or something. Then I switched to Mandrake and still had to 2003. Switched to Nopix at one point.
Well, I'm talking about when I'm back in like the 98 days when I first tried Linux. And
oh, wow. Yeah. You've been using it for quite a long time.
That was when I had a 4-gig hard drive. It was really not an option of rebooting. Well, the laptop I had had a 4-gig.
Yeah, I can see that.
So that
Windows
was Linux.
Itself is like 2 gigs right there.
Yeah, that's why I was running Linux on the 4-gig box.
Yeah, I can see that. Well, anyway, we kind of flew off topic.
Okay, well, here's another thing dealing with Microsoft and Linux. Okay, Microsoft surprises with Linux hands-on lab. See, now this goes and says the other thing. This asks a question. Is Microsoft toning down its aggressive anti-Linux campaign, or is a software giant realizing that playing nice can have the same effect?
No, Microsoft's letting people try Linux, so they're like, oh, where's my start button, and say, and like, get clips of them doing that and put them on a crappy commercial.
Well, the answer is unclear. Microsoft Corporation surprised many of the attendees at its annual worldwide partner show here this weekend by allowing a third party to present a hands-on lab that allowed attendees to play with a range of Linux desktop software. The titled Linux and Open Source Understanding the Competitive Challenge, and run by Don Johnson, an electrical engineer from TechStream Inc. The lab let attendees, many of whom were not familiar with Linux, experiment with KDE, as well as see the Apache web server in action. In addition, Johnson has become a system administrator and is familiar with both Microsoft and Open Source Solutions, gave them an overview of some Linux concepts and what he believed were the key trade-offs between Windows and Linux. It was clear that, of course, he's biased towards Windows for the most part. Johnson did clarify at the start of the lab that he was not anti-Microsoft and offered kudos to the software giant for allowing him to offer the lab. He's highlighted the difference in emphasis between the two operating systems, Windows, which focuses on integration, and Linux, which is flexible and modular. There is essentially three key Windows-Linux trade-offs, which can be spun either way depending on the application. First, integration versus flexibility. The second issue is focused on whether operating system is user-friendly or expert-friendly. And the third trade-off is for users is a matter of proprietary or single architecture versus an open one that runs on several hardware platforms.
Okay.
Interesting.
Yeah, he reads that so fast, it takes like moments for that to register. Like, he said, well, okay, and then he went,
Yeah, three things. Integration versus flexibility. User-friendly or expert-friendly. Or proprietary or single architecture versus open one.
Okay.
Oh.
Those were the three trade-offs.
That's not trade-offs, they're just different,
different ways of doing wording, things. That's the wording of the article.
It said trade-offs?
Yes.
I don't know. Where'd you get that from?
This, your favorite place.
TechWeb?
No. As in sarcastic, you don't like it really much.
Oh.
Microsoft.com?
eWeek.
Yeah, eWeek.
Oh, that's like why eWeek. I don't like eWeek. I have a big thing against their completely one-sidedness on a lot of issues. They have good news sometimes. I'm not going to say they don't. Like, every media
place
does.
Has bias. Every media place is biased in some way or another.
Yeah, I know. But
that's why you have to get articles that counteract it from other places.
I wish you had a camera in here, because then there's slanted, and then there's, like, cliff. And eWeek tends to be cliff a lot of the times, which sucks. But anyway, not totally sure, but, you know, getting
mostly. And they have a little picture.
89.9 degrees.
They have a little picture of a penguin on one side and the Windows
we're back.
Thingy. No, we're not. And the Windows thingy on the other side. It's not Tux. It's an actual real penguin.
It's time to shout out
end
user.
They couldn't afford Tux. Tux is free.
No.
End user, thank you for talking in the middle of the show.
Yeah, well, you know, he does that from time to time. Maybe I can talk over him.
No, I got it.
All right, cool.
Okay.
I learned to scroll in XMMS, so it moves ahead.
Nice. I completely love this engineer right here. This
guy's okay.
Good. All right.
Anyway, you got a story?
Actually, I have something I was reading, but I also have two related stories.
Ooh.
First one is the release of Google Earth maybe a week and a half ago.
Oh, I checked that out.
I was bored at work, so I downloaded it. It was Windows only, so I was like, yeah, first time to do it. Launched it. It took quite a bit of time for it to do its thing, but it looks like it's an app that runs on your desktop. You get to spin the world around and zoom in, and as you zoom in, it requests live from Google Maps more updated satellite images of wherever you're zooming into. So
it's pretty fast,
so,
too.
Yeah, you zoom into New York City, and it's all, like, gray murkiness. And then suddenly, moments later, squares pop up all over, and the new updated satellite image from the last day shows up. And you get to the point where you can see people on the street, taxis, blurry, of course, but you do see shapes. You do see that close.
Yeah, it's
and it's
damn
fully
close.
It's not fully 3D, but it's 3D to the point where you can spin around the world.
Yeah.
And you can tack your own place marks onto it. So if you have, like, places you always go to.
Somebody tacked Area 51 on that.
Someone tacked Area 51, which we had on our show before, and I thought that was great. I was, like, flying all over the place. I went to Russia, started looking at cities near, like, Moscow.
Oh, nice.
St. Petersburg was there. Smaller cities, like Minsk, wasn't there. Most of northern Russia wasn't there yet.
Wow.
But major areas, like the metropolitan London. Most of England. Australia even was
did
up on
did you see
there.
Fire in London?
Huh? Oh. I didn't see any fire.
That's why
I should have.
That's why they call him morbid.
That would have been really cool, but I didn't. Anyway, it's a really good app to play with. It's kind of hard to come by, depending on the moment you try to download it, because they kind of release it in streams, kind of like Gmail originally did, because it's still in beta. But once you have it, it's fun as hell to fool around with.
Isn't Gmail technically still in beta?
Everything on Google except for, I think Google Search is still in beta, honestly.
They change it every day.
They change it all the time. And speaking of that, Google Search, that great transition to my other story, because here we go. Can't find it on Google. Actually, it's can'tfindongoogle.com. Go there right now. This is a website which is kind of scary when you really think about it. What I guess it does is it probably ignores robot.txt files. I mean, is it robot.txt?
I don't know.
Anyway, it ignores your robots file so that it will look to your site no matter what. Something that Google doesn't do. Google will respect any denial or blockage. And it will list all websites you can't find on Google.
So it does it do the search through Google and then do it through the
through them and then just kind of gets rid of whatever they have?
Not exactly. It's more like a place where you can kind of post. You can log in, right? And then you can post stuff that you know you can't find on Google to their page. And then you can kind of like go there and check it out. And
so you can't actually search.
It's not a search yet. It's more links to places where you can't go on Google. It's like a message board. And it gives you the date it was posted, what you look for, and why you can't find it. And you can like leave a message, please help me find it. Stuff like, example, July 10th, 2005. I'm looking for an old school arcade game called Launcher or Moon Launcher. I can't find it on Google. Where can I find it? And people will post and tell you where you can find it.
July 8th, really looking for porno. Queries tried. XXX. Fucking. July 8th by EMA. July 8th, 2005, 3:40 a.m. and 57 seconds.
Yeah, I'm sorry. So let me correct myself. It's not a search engine that you noise your robot to TXT. It's like a place where you post what you're looking for and people can reply.
So when they reply to it, do they reply to you or does it go somewhere else?
They reply right there on the right-hand side where it says comments.
No one comments any. Comments one. Oh, okay. I want to see if someone commented on that one.
And actually post links. It's really cool.
Only one comment.
There's a comment right here, for example, on the I'm looking for video footage of Bill Clinton denying sexual allegations with Monica. And someone linked to it on the Washington Post somewhere. It's great. You should check this out. If there's something you always wanted to find, pop it in there.
Nice. I know. They want to find porn? Google Images. Just turn off safe search. Oh, I don't want to create a username. Screw that.
Yeah, it's a bit gay. Wants a drop of blood, but you'll be all right. It's something to do. Anything else?
Anything else as far as news?
Yes.
I have the 10 tabs still open, dude.
Yeah. Go for it.
I got stuff also. Right.
Linux lovers must wait until 2007 for SCO versus IBM showdown. Hmm? You know,
SCO
come on.
SCO again?
Yeah, they're still trying. How long has it been? That's been like 2 years. Was it one or two years since they started this bullshit? At least one. The SEO group's quest for software IP righteousness looks set to linger on until...
Kbps,
what the heck? This guy, you know, end user, stop talking in the middle of your show. Anyway.
That was fast, don't worry about it.
Yeah, because I cut him off.
Oh, okay.
The SCO group's quest for software IP righteousness looks set to linger in on until at least 2007 after a judge pushed back the trial date for the company's battle with IBM. A 5-week jury trial will now begin on February 26, 2007 as a result of a recent ruling by U.S. District Court Judge Dale Kimball.
Hey,
I thought I just shut you up.
Technical difficulties.
He's
obviously having technical difficulties. And so are we now. Thanks.
Thank you. Your technical difficulties has become my inability to read while somebody else is talking. As the case hobbles to trial, SCO will now also have a chance to depose IBM CEO Sam Palmisano in this dispute over whether or not bits of Unix owned by SCO illegally made their way into Linux thanks to IBM. The previous trial date, already delayed twice itself, was November 1st. The court finds that Mr. Palmisano could have unique personal knowledge related to the claims in this action, the judge wrote. Thus, IBM must produce Mr. Palmisano for a deposition. Although SCO, or SCO, I always pronounced it as SCO, seeks a 7-hour deposition, the court imposes a limit of 4 hours, not including any breaks taken during the deposition. In addition, the judge denied SCO's bid to amend its complaint for a third time. The proposed change would have charged IBM with violating copyright agreements around its Project Monterey software by putting Unix System V Release 4 code into IBM's AIX OS for its power chips. Okay.
That's pretty interesting.
Yeah, well...
Do I have an article kind of going along with that?
A lot of people already know what SCO's been trying to do and claims IBM has done and all that stuff. That's
my only response. Yes. A giant, big, ugly finger. The middle one, to be exact. Anyway.
Yeah, about that. Men blamed for spyware search.
What?
Men are blamed for the surge of spyware. Male That's workers nice. Are twice as likely as their female colleagues to swap music files at work on a daily basis, according to a new survey sent by censorware firm Surf Control. The firm argues that because illicit music and video files are increasingly used to spread spyware and computer viruses, that blokes are more often the cause of workplace spyware infestations than women.
Mm-hmm. All right.
But you also get the fact that men may trade video and music more, but it's women's fault for forwards.
Oh, forwards? Hell yeah.
Yeah. You never see a guy getting a, if you don't replace this, a poor little child has like one arm and only a third of a lung and she's dying in the corner, and if you don't forward this to 50 people in 5 seconds, she's gonna jump out of the TV and strangle you to death.
What guys the don't fuck?
Guys don't send that. The women will see that and they will sit there like, oh my god, I'm afraid this is gonna happen.
And then every
let
woman
me send it to everyone I know.
But see, the thing is, they send it to everyone they know, and their friends know you too, so they send it back to you.
Exactly.
And then you get it 16 times.
So
you know how many times my mom sent me the same forward?
20,000.
Eventually,
probably.
My mom would forward the forwards from your mom, and I eventually had to stop her from doing that.
Why don't you just block her altogether? Anything with FW: from her.
Half
gone.
The emails I get from my mom go to bulk mail folder in Yahoo. She only has my Yahoo name, thank God.
Because every now and then my dad sends me a good, like, perverted forward.
So don't block his name, block her name. Unless they share a name, in which case you're fucked. Or you can make an anti-spam rule for him. I don't know. Anyway, we'll work on that after the show.
Okay, well.
Fool around with.
You know how BBC usually has good, funny stories?
Yeah.
Well, they failed me today.
Oh.
So I had to. I had to.
Come on, you're morbid. You could have thought some of those things on the blasts were funny.
That's true.
I was going for more like the little robot sex thing.
Oh, okay.
Robot sex?
Well, now that I got something from CNET, which is about parking meters that are going to start being smarter now.
Smart you know how you parking go? Meters?
Yeah, you go to the parking meter. You put in a coin because you have to for a little bit and you get like a half hour, but it's only like a 5 minute thing you're doing. So, therefore, there's still like 25 minutes left in the meter after you leave.
Mm-hmm.
Now, they've decided to be Jewish and they're making it the meter so they know when the car leaves. So, as soon as the car leaves, it resets it back to zero.
Okay. See that?
Why? Well, they can't. 25. Whatever happened to 25 cents per half hour? Never said 25 cents per half hour per car.
Well, I mean, they're being stingy motherfucking bastards.
It never said 25 cents per half hour per car. Just said 25 cents for a half hour.
It's true. It's gay.
Yes. Now they're making it so as soon as you leave, what if you accident, you put the coin in, then
you park incorrectly.
You feel you're too close to the car, you want to give the other car more space to move. So you roll back like a half a foot. Is it going to say you left then?
Yeah,
and so you're
going
to have to put another coin in?
That's when you kick the fucking thing over, take your money back, and walk to wherever you're going.
Okay.
And don't forget to put it back up and put a little plastic bag over it so everyone knows that it's not working. Like we always do. I mean, I know someone who does that habitually. They have a plastic bag in their, like, glove compartment.
Mm-hmm.
They park, they take the bag out, they put it over the parking meter as if it wasn't working, and they walk away. That's their quarter.
Yeah, but technically you're not supposed to park there if the meter's not working.
They don't care. And they get away with it sometimes. It depends. Now I just gave a bunch of people ideas, but whatever.
I just I'm in the IRC, and I just told End User that we're using his episode from 410 as a background. Lots of technical difficulties.
I'm pretty sure he's not very happy with that. Okay, so let me give something here for you guys. This is just a quick thing. Oh, they have it.
End User thinks back to April.
Yeah.
Free Skype out days.
Free Skype out days?
Right.
Ooh.
Now, this isn't something that has an official date. It's something that's going through July. There's going to be 4 days in this month. One of them probably happened because it's going to be one per week. So there's probably one coming up this week.
I hope one's during DEF CON.
That would be nice. That would be wrong, actually.
That would be great.
because everyone and their mom would use it. Now, check this out. It's 4 days a month. You have to go to share.skype.com. Now, on the website, it'll be announced on the day that it's happening. So you have to try to check this every day habitually. The second you do, you go to DAO.net, you go into channel basenet, and you announce it so that we know and we can call people because we want to know.
Rumble.fl.dao. The only one that's working?
Rumble.fl.us.dao.net.
Wow, in stereo. I should have panned you left and right. Damn.
Oh, well, too bad. In any case, that's what's going on at this point. I just wanted to let everyone know there should be one a week, so was, if you heard that one happened yesterday, don't bother checking until next week starts. All right, and that's pretty much it for that. Just make sure that you read the instructions on how to claim it, otherwise you'll end up paying for those calls, and you're not going to be too happy with that.
I don't know. Let me know.
Let's see what else we have. One more thing I have is actually related to Apple.
Up next.
They're creating an iPod that's going to have a cell phone functionality built in.
Anonymous. Really?
Yes, and there's rumors going around that since they're making a Motorola kind of iPod combo, they might actually have, probably through another company, but they might have their own iPod phone service.
What carrier? Well, is this
no idea. If it's Motorola,
it'll probably go.
I'm looking at iDen, Sprint.
It'll probably
Nextel,
go with Singular.
Something like that?
Singular, maybe. No, Singular's more more Nokia.
Right, so I would say because it has Motorola functionalities, I'm looking at Sprint and Nextel, or both, or whatever. But then again, they might go like T-Mobile because everyone and their mom has a T-Mobile account.
I was going to say, it can't be Verizon because Verizon has Motorola, but they don't have fun stuff on their phone.
Verizon has nothing fun.
Yeah, you have to pay for it. But
it's like leeching money left and right, which is why everyone hacks their phones.
Speaking of which, I need to talk to you after the show.
Uh-oh.
Okay.
I'll check that out.
Okay.
Anyway, what's up? What's next? What's good?
Not much.
Besides this music, because this is pretty damn good.
IBM brings dual core to power PC processor.
What? Again?
IBM.
We mentioned that.
Did we?
No, we didn't.
No, right. We didn't.
We kind of went
briefly.
We read an email about Mac and power PC. Go on.
Did we?
The i386.
Oh, I don't know. Okay, so IBM has launched a dual core version of its PowerPC processor, a move that has industry observers have said been in works for more than a year. IBM announced the PowerPC 970MP on Thursday at its Power Everywhere show in Tokyo. The new chip is aimed at entry-level servers, clustered environments, and the embedded market. It's a dual core version of IBM's current N70FX chip. The company officials couldn't be reached for comment because they're mostly in Japan. According to the Armonk New York company, the PowerPC 970MP offers speeds ranging from 1.4 to 2.5 gigahertz, and each core has its own 1 megabit of level 2 cache. It also comes with a variety of power-saving features, including the ability for the frequency and voltage to be throttled down when workloads are light. In addition, each core can...
Good for mobile stuff, like they said, embedded. Go on.
Can individually be put into a power-saving state called Doze, or completely shut down while the other core continues operating.
Really?
Yes.
Interesting.
Also, show IBM announced a low-power version of their PowerPC 970FX chip. Chip offers operating power of 13 watts at a frequency of 1.4 GHz to 16 watts at 1.6 GHz. All chip also offers features that can dynamically control power consumption.
Did that one particularly have less cache, or did it say?
Didn't say.
Damn it. Oh well. It would have been nice to know. Sounds like it's their Celeron edition.
Yeah. Apple Computer currently.
They shot themselves in the foot because of this.
IBM uses PowerPC chips in a variety of systems, including its BlueGen supercomputer offerings and its JS20 Blade server. In addition, Apple Computer Inc. currently uses PowerPC chips and is reportedly
and reportedly is considering using the new dual-core offering in its PowerMac G5 systems.
Really? I thought they were... I mean, the other report is that they want to switch to the Intel architecture, but they're still going to use the PowerPC architecture? Are we going to be seeing a split in Apple? Is that what's going on?
Yeah.
They're is reportedly considering using the new dual-core for their G5s.
Huh. Interesting.
So they are going both ways. They're going to go for Intel and
Apple
IBM.
Goes both ways.
Yeah, it says here, energy efficiency and thermal issues are becoming the key concerns of businesses, and as more cores are added to processors and the frequency continues to climb, IBM and Sun Microsystems already offer dual-core processors in their respective Power and Spark processors, and Advanced Micro Devices, Inc. and Intel Corp. have begun introducing the capacity in their x86 servers and desktop chips. Never mind. I thought I was saying something about that.
All right.
Okay.
Before I forget, this is something I mentioned a long time ago.
In a galaxy.
Far, far away. No, it's... Write this down. r50rd.co.uk. Inside a research internal V2I engine. ENGIN. I'll post it on our Hacker Media show notes, just so you can check it out. It's the... robot made out of completely out of car parts that looks like a transformer I mentioned like eons ago on another episode.
It's gonna be in the show notes.
I'm gonna pop it in the show notes.
Oh, okay. You're gonna upload and do that shit?
Yeah, I'll do that.
Okay, cool.
I'll make sure I podcast it this time. yeah, anyway, it has all the videos for this insanely evil robot that is meant to catch speeding cars, this scary looking thing. Check it out. It looks just like Bumblebee from Transformers, so don't get scared. And just check it out. I'm going to show it to the guys after the show so they can see it. I'll keep this link here. And just go see that now. Like, it's excellent. It's awesome.
Omniscan.
Exactly. Okay. And the last thing I want to do is check out Windows Update .62NDS. That's the number 62.com. And there should be a section there. Why use Windows Update when you can use Firefox? And it shows you instructions on how to set up Firefox to set up do your Windows updates through instead of having to use that Microsoft bullshit.
Really?
Right, yeah. Look at that. Everyone's freaking out.
No, because, I mean, whenever you go to Windows Update, if you have a Windows box or you're, well, I've tried it at work, and it said you must use Microsoft Internet Explorer to get the updates.
Well, there's always a way around everything, and they found it. So just check it out. It's set up right there. It's not that long, actually. You can probably do this in like 3-4 minutes.
Is that the link you're putting in the...
I'm also going to try to put that in there. I'm going to see if we can get some links up on the Hacker Media thing. Some people are interested in this stuff.
I have a question for each of you. Would you buy a single song from Napster?
Fuck no.
Would you buy a song from Napster?
Fucking no. Okay. I saw that news story too.
Students refuse to buy a single song from Napster. Napster has put a new twist on the notion of being a lost leader. It has actually managed to sell more songs for rival online music services than for its own product, according to a survey conducted by a university customer.
How much does theirs cost?
Like a cent, honestly, and no one buys it anyway.
That's too expensive.
Not a single University of Rochester student admitted to buying a song via Napster during the fall 2004 semester. Instead, 8% of the students likely turned to the likes of iTunes and Music Mash to buy songs they enjoy. That's an ominous sign for a company spending millions to seed the university market with music in the hopes of unseating Apple as the clear leader in online music. Well, you know what?
I used Music Match. I just never actually bought music from them.
Oh, well.
Do they have a Linux version?
No clue.
Huh.
I know. I already did math. Anyway, let's see. Do they have a Linux version?
I'm checking.
I don't think they do.
For Music Match?
For Music Match, definitely. I hope not. That thing was evil. Let's see. I know I have a couple other things I wanted to do.
I'll pull another story up. Debian, struggling with security.
That's new.
Exactly. Linux distributors falling behind rivals in releasing security updates due to server configuration problems and manpower shortages. Debian is facing difficulties getting timely security updates to users of its Linux distribution due to... Wait.
what the, it just rewrote the first paragraph a different way. Anyway,
they're
that's confusing. Okay. The issues recently surfaced when Debian released the latest version of its Linux distribution early in June, according to Martin Schulz, a member of the organization's security team. The release, Schulz wrote on his blog, caused configuration problems on the server, which was responsible for distributing security updates, and it hasn't been functioning properly since. Several security updates aren't built on all architectures as they should be, the developer wrote only yesterday. Currently, it's totally unreliable. Well, that wasn't yesterday. That was July 5th. That was like well over a week ago. But yeah, since then, five days ago. Yeah. Oh well, whatever. I can't count. Anyway, what's it called? I've read since then that they're getting their stuff together and it's working again or something. I know at least people have been getting the update for zlib and shit. So everybody heard about that zlib thing, right?
I haven't, but I've been kind of busy this week with the new work stuff. All right. What's the zlib thing, real quick? Just to get it out there for people who don't know.
Let's see. I'm trying to remember. Well, it was some kind of basic security thing, probably like some new remote buffer overflow or something. I don't know.
That's nice.
Yeah.
It's always friendly.
You know, but all the distros one after the other very quickly have been updating that. Yeah.
All right. Let me bring up one more thing because we always like robot news. Okay. Now this is out of Reuters, and I kind of got it through Yahoo. Japanese robot guards to patrol shops and offices.
Really?
Yes.
Robot guards?
Robot guards, and I have a picture I'll show you in a moment after the show.
I'll be back.
Just look for it on Reuters. It should be Japanese robot guards.
I'll be back.
Okay, so the basic premise, just to get the lowdown, it's going to be called Guard Robo D1. Horrible name. It's like 109 centimeters tall. It's pretty much, its purpose is to run through set determined like patrol routes and look for suspicious activity. We'll give another chance. The price is yet to be determined, and it will be able to alert human guards via radio and by sending camera footage directly to the guards.
So
if it detects intruders, fires, water leaks, anything out of the normal.
So say this is like a grocery store. Mm-hmm. So some suspicious activity could be someone who's never been to this like supermarket before, mm-hmm. and they're walking back and forth looking for a certain product.
Right.
Because they've just never been there before.
I see a lot of problems developing from this. But it also detects like fires. It also detects like water leaks.
Yeah, that's called smoke detectors.
I don't know about water leaks. I've never seen a water leak detector.
Shoes, if you see them, they're wet.
But that's a freaking expensive fucking water detector.
Maybe someone spilled a bottle of water.
That might be a problem at first, yeah. Someone accidentally breaks like a Poland Spring bottle.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh no, there's a flood.
This little siren goes off, evacuates the building, calls the fire department or whoever the hell it would call.
No, but it gets it fucked up. It accidentally executes the code for intruder, and like SWAT teams roll in.
Locks every. Okay.
We still have time.
That's fun.
All right, so
is there time for not much?
Time for not much. We got a couple minutes left. Is there anything anyone wanted to get said or done?
Oh, yeah, we now have a BaseNet relationship. Capsulin.
We do.
No.
Yes, we have BaseNet relationship capsulin, and it is.
Can't we just send them to Geek Glove Radio or something?
Exactly. That would be a lot easier.
Yes.
Yeah, check them out. They're on Rant. They're on DDP. Yeah, they're all over the place.
You know who you are. We're probably not the best people to come to advice for relationships.
Definitely not. I don't like people.
So. Go to a Geek Love Radio or something. They'll probably be a little better help you than we can.
I'm not sure the exact URL for them, but I do know that they link to them on BenRev.
I think it's like geekloveradio.com, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, probably. But
just look them up in Google. That's what it's for.
They link to them from BenRev.
So. Yes, that too.
Yeah.
Oh, we got to update that. Anyway, one more thing before we go.
Yes.
All right. The thing with the slicko.net.
Yeah, what about it?
People who are going
oops.
There.
I accidentally just discovered that I'm able to get into their little admin interface thingy, still, even with my account suspended. And, I deleted the .ht access, put my own in there, so slicko.net now refers to basenetradio.net. Kind of nice.
Which is good, because people were going to the old site looking for us, and we went there.
Yeah, we went there.
Alright, well, I guess this concludes this week's episode of BaseNet Radio. I hope you had fun and enjoyed the show. If you have any questions, comments, flames, or any other things you want to terrorize us with, send them to basenet@basenetradio.net. And if you're listening to this on DDP Hack Radio or Rant Radio, up next should be Binary Revolution Radio, unless Stank had a heart attack. Have a good week.